on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Jeanette Bryan. For today's show, I have two wonderful ladies as my co-hosts, Renee Sullivan and Susan Ross. Together, we are going to explore behavior management in pre- and post-diagnosed autistic children. To understand an autistic child behavior, you need to understand what autism, or ASD, autism spectrum disorder, is. Autism is a developmental disorder that appears in the first 3 years of a child's life. This disorder affects the brain's normal development of social and communication skills. According to the National Institute of Neurological Disorder and Stroke, it is estimated that 1 out of 88 children aged 8 will have autism. Autism spectrum disorder is more common in males. Males are 4 times more likely to have autism than females. Scientists aren't certain about what causes ASD, but it is likely that both genes and the environment play a role. But because there is no cure for ASDs, therapies and behavioral interventions are designed to remedy specific symptoms and can bring about substantial improvement. So today, we are going to talk about a few strategies that help other parents cope and manage behaviors in children with autism. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Inspiring. Please feel free to call us and share your viewpoints. Hello, Renee.
Hi.
Hello, Susan.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to have you all here today with me. Renee, I will let you briefly introduce yourself to my listeners. How are you?
Okay. I'm fine. My name is Renee Sullivan, and I live in Macon, Georgia. I am a PhD student at Walden University, and I'm doing a dissertation on autism. So this is a very appropriate radio show. And I am a marriage and family therapist, and I've worked with children with autism in foster care, as well as being a middle school teacher and having autistic children in my middle school classroom.
Great. And Susan, if you can just refresh the memory of some of our listeners by telling them a little bit who you are.
Hi, my name is Susan Reese. I live in Maryland, and I am also a PhD student at Walden University. My specialization is different from Renee's. I am in health psychology, and I have, before working my current position, taken a position as a behavioral specialist consultant, working with children with autism and children on the spectrum. So I see I have had a little bit more experience with the parents and in being in home and a brand new diagnosis.
Thank you, ladies, and welcome to Inspiring. Let me first clarify that I don't think there is such a thing as a perfect behaved child. I was not perfectly behaved. In fact, my mother can tell you I was very hard-headed and set on my own ways. But children with autism tend to be more difficult to handle because of their lack of social skills and understanding the world around them. Ladies, I have a couple of questions, but let me just start with number one. How can we manage behavior in autistic children?
Well, I think the first thing. Sorry. Go ahead, Renee. Okay, before we get into that, what I'm thinking is there are three different main characteristics of autism we need to look at. As you mentioned in the introduction, communication and social are two prominent symptoms of autism, and also behavior being the third. With communication, it would depend a lot of whether the child is either verbal or if they're nonverbal, because the way that they interact would be a little bit different. Also, with social, the big factor is their interaction or their lack of interaction with others, especially in reciprocal social relationships. They may be able to interact with you, but you may be thinking that they're not tuning in or listening, because of their lack of focus. And then with behaviors, they tend to engage in very realistic kind of behaviors. Maybe they spin tires on their car upside down for hours. Okay. Those are all the stereotype behaviors. And then
okay.
We get into the one who
that generally drives parents crazy. That is the challenging interim. So those are the three areas. So I think we start there. It's the challenging tantrums, I think, that give the parents and the challenges.
When you talk about challenges, what kind of challenges are you really referring to?
Well, I can give you an example from classroom. My very first introduction to a child with autism was when the school secretary knocked on my school room door, and there stands this lovely child with autism. He's pulling at his ears. He's not saying anything. He's just making a noise. His mother looks scared at open the door. My parapro and I had no introduction whatsoever to autism. We did not even, we barely knew what autism was at that point. We opened the door and he came in. My parapro and I looked at each other, what are we supposed to do with this kid? Because we were in a situated classroom that we had not been trained specifically to handle children with autism. So the first couple weeks of getting accustomed to the child was quite challenging for us. He was new to the environment. So it was not unusual for him to run away from us. So we had to make sure that I was with him at all times. When he got angry, he'd have a tantrum, like tear things on the wall, wanted to hit, scratch, fight. And we were in public, on a field trip.
Okay. Okay, Susan, so what about what Renee is saying, that when you come across a challenge behavior from a child perspective, that from your perspective, not knowing that the child that you have in front of you have autism, what type of experience did you have with regard to what Renee is talking about?
My experience, Jeanette, is that most of the parents that I have dealt with, they had already gone through the assessment process and their child was actually diagnosed. Initially, parents would identify behaviors that were out of their norm. Sometimes parents have this preconceived idea of how children should behave, and like you were addressing the children, there's like they're no normally behaved children, but they get a pattern or repetition of certain types of behaviors that are alarming to them. And they find that they're at their wit's end, or they kind of feel frustrated because they don't know how to deal with this child. And they take the child, and they have a series of assessments, and a diagnosis is made. My experience is, as far as the children are concerned, once they have been diagnosed in certain states, and it's not just national genetics, just certain states will have certain funding or certain programs in place until a child reaches 18. And in those states and their funding, they may allow for a therapist or mobile therapist to come into the home and watch the child interact at home, come into the school and watch the child interact in the school. And the between the mobile therapist and the case manager, we were completing the prescription by the licensed provider who had already made the assessment and made the determination that this child needs so many hours of continuous monitoring or behavior modification. I think a lot of the problem is helping parents feel comfortable with the fact that, yes, their child has an autism or an autistic disorder or a disorder on the spectrum. But with the right support and with the right help, parents feel that their lives are still doable, and they really do need to know that.
Yeah, but have you ever came across a child, came across a parent whose child is has autistic, basically display autistic behavior, but she is not aware that her child is autistic? Have you ever come into contact with a parent like that?
Absolutely. And sometimes in being able to, now, you know, after a while, like there's no excuse for not having education for people who make assessments and providers, we just continuing education, that kind of thing. But parents who have no idea, when we run across children or we come in contact with a family or we meet new people, we notice things that we instantly think our mind goes off to, this child has a potential displays potential behaviors that we might consider to be autistic. And mm-hmm. I really do think that putting the seed into their mind, just asking the parent, does this child do this all the time? Is this a problem in other areas, especially like social interaction or their lack of communication skills? I really do think, Jeanette, that the situation is that when we come across people who do not know that their mm-hmm. child could be autistic, we begin to ask the questions about, is this a repetitive behavior? Is this an issue that happens frequently? And mm-hmm. and how do you deal with it? And if parents are frustrated, they have no idea what it is, they have no idea what they're doing, they don't know if this is working, and they can't find anything that does work, then it's like, you know what, you need to have your provider, talk to your provider about this behavior, and could it be autism? Could it be autistic behavior? And they really are not going to get that answer that they need or the diagnosis that they need until the child is assessed and it is determined that, you know what, these behaviors and these things that are being evident in the child are actually behaviors that are autistic or children on a spectrum. And then once the diagnosis is made, then parents can get educated and they move forward.
Yeah, but Renee, sometimes when a parent is told that their child is autistic, it seems to them that is a life sentence, that autism to them is a life sentence, that they're going to have to deal with this for the rest of their life. And usually they lose courage to even confront that because they're like, okay, what's this? Why can't my child be as normal as every other child? But my thing about that, usually I tell parents, your child is as normal as any other child. The only problem is their behavior, and that's where you need to focus more. So how do you encourage this parent? What type of advice will you give this parent to deal with children with autistic behavior and help them cope with that transition with the diagnosis that they just have received?
I know that you addressed that question to Renee, but this is Susan, and I wanted to make sure you want me to answer that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the first thing that parents have to understand is why your child is singled, why you feel singled out, why your child has to be the one to be different. No one can really clearly produce an answer for that. The one thing I would tell you is that when parents do not have support and they have to deal with this on their own, they can be set up to feel isolated and like it is a life sentence. And the reality, as the child ages and matures, you may see some symptoms lessen, some symptoms never lessen. You may have things that continue way past their 18th birthday. And I think a lot of the benefit to having your child diagnosed is that most providers and most organizations will say, you know what, there's a broad array, or there's a lot of different organizations now that are focusing on autism and children on the spectrum, and not just for the child, but giving you some state-by-state support organizations that you can get into groups, you can talk to other parents who have children, and the more support you feel, the more support and more education you get, the least likely, you may still feel, a parent may still feel isolated to an extent, but if they have an outreach, they have someone to connect with, and that person says, you know what, you're not by yourself. We're going through it too, and this is how we manage. Parents pick up tidbits of things that work, and they try it in their home, and it worked for someone else, and by God, it may work for them. And they learn, and they grow, and they get through it day by day. It does become a day-by-day issue.
Okay, but don't you think that every child is different, and at some point we need to recommend, let's say that we find a parent who is unaware
Let's just go back to a parent who are unaware of the diagnosis of with autism, and the child is throwing tantrums and they just don't know what to do. But let's say that you are face to face with that parent, and with your background in psychology, kind of like point out the fact that, okay, this child may have autistic behavior, but I cannot basically come up and say to the parent, your child is autistic, because you can't diagnose them. How can you then direct them to go see a pediatrician who can actually go ahead and give them that diagnosis and help them with the tantrums and the behavior that the child is showing when you come in contact with that particular parent?
Well, that's kind of sort of where I'm going with this, Jeanette, in the sense that most of the time when I meet people and I have spend a little time with them and we get to talking, because it's more than you're a meeting people and it's like very superficial, hi, how are you, that kind of thing. After a while, when you get to know people, or if you get to see them more than one time, you can begin to say, you know, have you ever considered that behavior might not be, I know that you're struggling with it, but it might be something that could be autistic. You have to actually present the idea and plant a seed that a parent that's struggling with a behavior, especially when it's repetitive in social interactions and lack of communications and other things, you have to actually present that as a potential possibility. Yes, I know that we do not diagnose in the field just like by talking to somebody, but saying, could it be? Is it possible? Maybe you need to talk to your doctor, your child's doctor about this and see what he or she may think about that, because that particular provider would be more apt to look back at the child's history and be able to say, well, you know what, it might be something that we need to have looked at a little deeper. Just meeting somebody off the street who has a child who is behaving inappropriately does not automatically warrant, hey, your child could be autistic, because the child could be acting out for a whole host of other reasons that have nothing to do with autism. They may have a time where they're acting out because of something that happened within the home or whatever, but that's not their normal behavior. What we're looking for and what we're talking to parents about is when the behavior, inappropriate behavior, is repetitive. It happens over and over again. We see it more than one time, or we see it many times, and it's not really being addressed because they're not diagnosed. And those repetitious behaviors, especially in these two areas, are hallmark red flags that warrant a parent to take their child for an evaluation.
Yeah, but Susan, I understand perfectly what you're trying to say. But I also, at some point, you have some parents. I have came in contact with a lot of parents who tells me they can't bring their children out for lunch, for example, in restaurants, because they are so care of how they won't be able to control their behaviors. But in the meantime, they're still saying, well, my child is normal. There is nothing wrong with him. He just don't know how to control himself in public. Does that warrant for saying that the child is just misbehaving and they just don't know how to behave themselves in public? Or is that a sign that there is something underlining going on, not necessarily autism, but something underlining going on with that behavior issue, that you cannot at some point bring your child to the restaurant because you, in fact, are scared that other people will be looking at you because you will be unable to handle that child in public? So what can we suggest to these parents? Not just, we're talking about behavior management.
I understand where you're going with this, but I don't think there's any gray area. I think it's black and white, in a sense that if a parent knows that a child has been, generally, if I'm getting back to the root, if a parent tells me that they don't want to take their child to a restaurant because they're afraid their child misbehaves, that probably tells me that has happened before, and they'll do it one time and be thoroughly embarrassed and leave the restaurant early or what have you, because they don't know any different. We're still up in the air. They don't know what they're dealing with. They just know that that event, that incident, sets them up for embarrassment, and they stay away from taking their children in public because they do not want the look, the stares, the whispers. They do not want their child to act out in public. But before, we had so much research on autism and children on the spectrum. Maybe that is the society's mindset, that parents were isolated and they did not take their children out in public because they were afraid of how it looked and they wanted to avoid embarrassment. But now, I do think that if that happened before and they're afraid to do it, that in and of itself means that there's a behavior, something there that is not quite right. Is it something that we're supposed to do at home that, you know, after an assessment diagnosis, a child does not have autism? Then how do we address this behavior at home? What kind of behavior modifications? But if the child is autistic, we have so much more research now. We have so much more resources and support, not just for the child and behavior modifications, but for the parent and parents to actually be able to deal with that. So, yes, nowadays we do have more awareness of children on the spectrum. I think that society in and of itself, there are so many different issues that we are dealing with from parents, on the parent side of the house and the children themselves and their behaviors, that I don't know that society still takes that mindset and talks in whispers. But people are going to do what they want to do regardless of your best intentions. So I think if my child is autistic and I take them out in public and they misbehave and they embarrass me, I am not going to think any less of my child because I already know what is the issue. And society and people around me will just have to accept it or go on. I mean, that's okay. But for parents who do not know and they've had that happen before, I would suggest that parents talk to their provider about it and let the provider decide if an assessment is necessary. There is not going to be an easy answer, an easy fix. If a parent does not get an assessment and they don't take the steps to get the child evaluated, they will always wonder, what is wrong with my child? Well, if you don't take your child to get assessed and evaluated, you will never know.
True. That's really true. But there is one other thing about you say something very, very important, saying that when you out with your child and your child has a tantrum and have a behavior issue in front of the public and embarrasses you, you will not think less about of your child. That's true. But the community, the public, the people, society is such judgmental at this point in life that nobody want to help nobody and nobody want to stand up and say, okay, you have no right of judging this particular person or doing saying what you have to say. In fact, I think for children who have autism, there is so much more to be done in educating not just the parents of children who have autism, but the population, the community, the people out there who have no knowledge of what autism is, what behavior to look for when you see a child or you see a person behaving a certain way, to knowing that this person needs help, not just to judge them. Let's take, for example, when there is a child that is autistic and is sent in a school, in public school, for example. Some educators in public school are not trained in dealing with children with autism, and they generally don't know what to do with kids in the classroom. So how can we help in changing that, in letting parents know or sending them to the right resources that can help them while the child is going to school, for example, dealing with other kids and having the parents over and over again with the principal, by the way, your child is behaving, misbehaving, your child has misbehaved, your child did this, you repeatedly called through the school system by the school principal to meetings with regard to your child. What can we tell these parents? How can we help them?
Well, then again, too, Jeanette, we're trying to find some roots fix, some kind of resource, something that we can say in the show today that's going to help parents. But I would tell you that if it is a state, most of these are state-funded programs. A lot of resources that are state-funded get allocated to for education, and it affords the opportunity for children to have mobile therapists that come into the home and come into the school and what have you. If those funds are not there, then I think we are predisposed or set up, if you will, to have a problem where the teachers do not know what they're dealing with, really, because the resources are not there, or there's not enough resources to be able to go through all the education systems and all the different schools for every state. We may mm-hmm. want to consider talking to our state government, asking for more resources for schools, because when the resources are there, we can find that we begin working hand-in-hand, partnering with the schools. And as my experience as being a behavior specialist, going into a school where there is state funding, the student, is not necessarily mainstream. That means they're put into a classroom with other students, but they're put into a special ed class. And the teachers are familiar that with students that come into a special ed class that they have special needs. But mm-hmm. in a mainstream classroom, those same state-funded programs afford the opportunity for organizations to come in and hand-in-hand partner with the school system, even though it's state-funded, to be able to say, I'm going to be here sitting with this child, and I'm going to make sure that they work with what is being taught or presented in the classroom at that time. If the child gets out of hand, the teachers and the school systems already know. They have been educated. They are up to speed with how that the fact that their state provides funding and resources for children so they can attend school. So they already know, and it's a hand-in-hand partnership. But for states who do not have that kind of funding, and parents who live in that state without that kind of funding, what happens is they have teachers whose classroom is only mainstream, and mm-hmm. so special needs children may or may not be in that classroom with all the other children who may or may not have any type of issues. And when the child acts out, or if they are acting in these behaviors that are so typical for a child on the spectrum or with autism, then they're not really familiar with that because the educational resources for the school side of the house is not there. I think that we need to start touching base with the politicians and to the top authorities to have the authority to make a change in state funding. But with our economy the way it is and how things are going, even in our own government system, change may not happen overnight. Change is good. That's all well and good. But we're looking for change to happen yesterday. In the meantime, we still have to do status quo. But we are going to have to start making an approach on politicians, our senators, congressmen, that this is a real, real issue in the classroom, and we need state funding for programs that will help these children with autism or children on the spectrum to get the kind of help they need in the classroom, which also means that we're teaching the student, the teachers and the facilitators what it is going to be like to have to deal with these children. They don't get all these resources and all this education, and we walk in and it's all good. No, we're going to be modeling the kind of interactions and interventions every single day with that child, and gradually we will build a knowledge base, not just for the therapist, but for the school, the teachers, the facilitators that come in contact with them every day.
Thank you, Susan. Also, I just want to let my listeners know that we had Renee with us, but unfortunately, she's not going to be on with us. There are a couple of difficulties with her communication through our talk show, so hopefully we'll have her next in 2 weeks. But we are going to continue on talking about behavior management with autistic children with Susan, and hopefully we are going to provide the best strategy possible for parents. And Renee have opened the dialogue with a couple of great ideas, and Susan is continuing that conversation with great ideas. And I think that between her and I, we will provide you a more succinct and truth dialogue today. So, Susan, so that we can continue, how can we encourage parents then to understand their role in helping their children blend in with others without having behavior outbursts? We also need to understand at some point that autism does not define a child. A child defines autism. So how can we help parents then overcome that challenge of everyday behavior when the child is blending in with other kids?
I think the first and foremost thing, Jeanette, in that is that parents need to know. I think I have watched parents who had no knowledge of this whatsoever, who had children that, you know, number of children in the family. One or two of them were exhibiting symptoms. And it, to some degree, you know, we tend to manage children, all our children, the same. And that we think that, or in some cases, parents will think that one kind of behavior modification fits all, and then somewhere along the line, that doesn't work. For this child, I may have three children in the house, but for this child, that behavior modification doesn't work. And so I think the greatest thing that we can offer parents is support. I think the resources, and there is a lot of resources online. You can get information online free. If you can get on the internet and you can get the resources, and I will be posting resources on our Facebook site just mm-hmm. after this show. But if you can get online and read more about what it is, read more about where the research is going right now, and look at some of the parents' support sites. They know that parents, these organizations know that parents struggle every single day with trying to learn what they're dealing with and how can I do something to make it better. Because it not just makes it better for the child, it makes it better for the environment in the house, because now we may have two or three children, only one child is autistic, and mom and dad are trying to have their normal life and deal with their autistic child, but blend it all together to make one family unit work. And so the more we get parents to feel comfortable getting support, we need to get past that stigma, you know. And I know even with the research and everything and all the advances that are being made, even though there's no cure, there's a lot more organizations talking about that. There's a lot more support systems out there. And if we could get past the stigma of saying, my child is autistic, oh my goodness, I'm embarrassed to bring this up. No, we need to try and work through that and get past that, because, like you say, the autism does not define the child. This child has certain needs beyond what my other children need, but they are my child nonetheless. So in order for me to feel comfortable every single day in my home, I'm going to do what it takes for me, and that means I'm going to have to sit in front of a computer, I'm going to get some information about what it is, what are they doing now, and start connecting with support organizations, and there's a lot of them online, that we don't even have to leave our house, and we can get with other support organizations. And they could be within our state. There are some sites that connect you to groups in your state. And you can talk to other parents. I think the greatest thing is the resources. The greatest thing is the parental support. Because then parents learn what works, what does not work. They also learn how to deal with their own emotions, their own struggles, as they try to bring some sense of continuity and normalcy to their lives, because especially when they have more than one child, they still have to have their needs met while they're attending to the needs of their autistic child. And it is, I have not seen a family where there's just one parent really be successful doing that without some kind of support, some kind of resources in place. And I really do think it would be great if we had people call in and give us some experiences. How do they cope? How do they manage? That would be awesome. But if they don't, I will tell you that there are a lot more, there's so much more information available now to parents. They don't even have to leave the comfort of their home to find it.
Now, Renee, Susan, I'm sorry. I have a question for you because we're talking about managing behavior in autistic children. I want to ask you a couple of those behavior that children will likely show. For example, pulling hair. What are the possible reasons an autistic child will be pulling their hair, for example? And what kind of strategy will you suggest to parents to help them with that particular area in their life?
Well, I would tell you, from my experience, I have not experienced children that had a lot of pulling hair as one of the behaviors we needed to work on and modifying. What I have noticed, and we remember now that the hallmark symptoms or the hallmark behaviors of autism is the difficulty, repetitive difficulty, that means it happens over and over again, in social interactions with others and in how they communicate. You've got to also remember that in children who are autistic, sometimes they excel in other areas, but in social interaction and communication, they may really have issues with. We have to spend time educating parents and helping the child work through every time they do something like that, that pulling hair is not the way that you get somebody's attention. You can just say, hey, or, you know, however the child wants to address another person, but what they're seeing as pulling hair might be a way to communicate with someone, communicate with another child, and that is their way. We have always thought that pulling hair, children pulling hair, was bullying and was bad. We have to look at the behavior, first of all. Why are they doing that? If they're trying to communicate with someone and that's their method, then we want to try and rechannel that need to communicate into a more acceptable behavior. And so that takes work, and it doesn't happen overnight. It's just like it's a repetitive behavior. Now they've done it enough, and they're comfortable doing it. They're going to do it all the time. Well, we have to,
Susan. I'm going to let you continue, but because Renee was not able to be on the phone with us, she's actually sending me messages that she wants me to go ahead and let the listener know. So I am going to go through a couple of her messages. She says, in my research, many moms are often with the child most of the time and without support for themselves, and they can experience their own mental health issues. She said, as Susan said, it is up to the mom to get the help that she needs and the support also. Also, the dad can also feel overwhelmed because he has to work extra to compensate the mom's inability to work. So the head banging, the biting, the running away from autistic children comes from anxiety and frustration. She also speaks about stomach pain. Stomach ache. She says sometimes children with autism have stomach ache, and just as any child who doesn't feel well, it may cause the child to act out, especially if they are nonverbal. So what do you say about what she's sending me?
Oh, that's very much on point, and they are very good points. You have to remember that if these two flags or these two hallmark symptoms, social interaction behaviors and their methods of communicating are much, much different, then yes, if they're not feeling well, most definitely there's going to be a different way of them expressing that, or we have to pick up on it. But as a parent knows their child very, very well, over time with just in the same repetitive behaviors, we begin to see that every time little Johnny feels bad, he can't communicate, he's nonverbal, whatever, this is what happens. And so before, I've had to take little Johnny to the doctor, and this is what's going on. But because he can't communicate, I agree with her 100%.
She also stated that sometimes autistic children do not experience pain like normal kids. So what is your take on that? I did not know that specifically, that the way they take pain is totally different from other people. So they basically would scratch themselves and they don't even feel the pain of scratching themselves. And so how can we then tell her parents, help them not to do that, not to hurt themselves, because basically if they're scratching themselves to the point where they don't even know that they're hurting themselves, how can we stop them? How can we help them stop doing all of that, doing all that harm to themselves, to those little bodies of theirs?
I think, again, Jeanette, I don't think there's an easy fix, and I don't think there's one easy way. I do think that we pick up on the behaviors and the signals of our child. And when we see things that they do over and over again, it sets our own red flags. We become aware of when this behavior happens, this is going on. When this happens, this is going on. We make associations between what is the child doing or not doing, and what it has meant in the past and what it could mean now. Generally, we're going to find that the more parents are familiar. I have had parents actually document or keep a running log of the behaviors that their child exhibit, and when their child behaviors came up, then it was almost always associated with this need or this problem, and then they have their own third column, this is what we did in the past. And sometimes before parents can get really nervous about this whole thing is that generally mothers are going to devote an awful lot of time in making sure that that child is okay from sun up to sun down. And so they have already either kept it in their mind, different things that have come up, and this is how we dealt with it, or in the case of the one parent that I had that actually documented, and she went back and used it as her own personal reference. Okay, for other children on the spectrum or with the disorder, this is how they managed it. But for me and mine inside this house, this is what happened when the behavior came up. This is why we think it happened, and this is what we did. And hey, if it worked, it didn't work. And so sometimes they build their own resources.
You know, I have a couple of possible reasons, Matt. I did a little bit of research before I came on to the show today, and I just wanted to put a couple of information out there that I kind of like found as I was doing my own research. With regard to the hair pulling, for example, the possible reasons that I have found is that the child may be seeking a reaction from an adult. They're looking for attention. They're having difficulty meeting new people, probably because you took them to a new environment and they just don't want to be there, so they start acting out. The suggested strategy that I have found with regard to hair pulling, for example, is if the child has long hair, the parents needed to tie the hair. They needed to avoid giving the child the reaction that they needed, and they were suggested not to talk to them, talk back to them, not give them eye contact while they're doing the behavior, try to distract them with something else, probably by showing them a picture or something like that, redirect them to something different, something in an appropriate activity that can keep their mind off pulling their hair. And also, before bringing them to unfamiliar territory, it was suggested to have a conversation with children prior to that, prior to taking them to an unfamiliar place, letting them know where they're going, who they are going to meet, how many people are going to be there, basically introducing them to the new environment before they even get there. Also give them the opportunity to satisfy the sensation that they have in pulling their hair and so forth. And with regard to biting, for example, because autistic kids tend to bite, the possible reason for this was looking for attention, seeking out sensory input from the mouth, the frustration at not being able to communicate what it is that is going on with them. They are looking for the reaction around them, the parent reaction, for example, and they just want to pinch their mouth, for example. The suggested strategy was to try to figure out, rule out any medical attention. So take them to a dentist, for example, and rule out that there is no dental reasons for this behavior. Some other possible reasons, issues were spitting, for example. Some autistic kids or speak, they wanted to know the possible reason where that they enjoy the reaction from an adult or child around them. They're looking for attention. They probably may have difficulty swallowing or producing, they are producing too much saliva, or they just like to play with saliva and enjoy the way it feels. And sometimes they use the behavior to avoid doing something that they are being told to do. And the strategy that was suggested were to take your child to the dentist still and rule out any medical reason, avoid eye contact, play this behavior down as much as possible, limit verbal communication, wipe away the saliva as soon as they appear. Don't give the child the attention that they're looking for. Redirect them to something more appropriate. So from my research, I came across the same, the similar strategy, redirecting the child attention, avoiding eye contact with them, because if you give them eye contact, you push them to do the behavior more. So I don't know, but what do you think of those suggestions, Susan?
Well, actually, I think a lot of it is age-related and age-appropriate. And as I mentioned, that for states that have funding, support, and resources for parents and autistic children, they're generally up to and including age 18, and it may change depending on the state. But mm-hmm. I do think that as the child ages and matures, there are changes to the behaviors that have to be done to accommodate the age. Gradually, children, even with autistic children, and it's been my experience, that even as they age and they are physically growing, they still revert back to these behaviors to get attention. And that I understand. And I also think that it is a possibility that not giving them what they're looking for definitely works, because they have to be old enough to understand that that doesn't work anymore. Because if you have a child that's 4 or 5 and 6 years old, whatever, be diagnosed, that may take time. That may take time, and it is just as the child is producing a repetitive behavior that you don't want to see, parents end up getting in a repetitive behavior intervention or a modification for the child, and the child does it over time, parents will do that same thing over and over again until the child has aged and matured, and that now we're seeing the benefit of it. Okay, so
basically consistency in behavior management is the key in managing your child with autism.
So, absolutely. I think that it is definitely something that you'll start getting some when you have a child that's first diagnosed. You're gonna be overwhelmed. Then you're going to start looking for more information on it. And then as you get into knowing what you're dealing with, what you're looking at, and then it's age-appropriate behavior modifications, and they get adjusted as the child grows and matures. And you're right. When you're talking about children playing with saliva and they like the feel of it, it has been my experience that a lot of modifications for younger children, and say up to probably 6, 7, 8 years old, maybe all the way up to 12 years old, really, really focus in on different textures and different things that they like. And I have one child that simply loved to play with water. You know, just loved to play with water. Just fascinated with water. But I think it is age-appropriate modifications, and it takes time.
So basically, what we can tell parents then is that they need to be consistent, they need to be patient, they need to be enthusiastic about letting their child know that they love them regardless of what they're doing, and that they need to choose the type of reward that they can give them from if they pick on a good behavior instead of a bad one, and they need to get informed. And they also need to consider getting involved in seeking behavioral specialists, and also getting more resources within the community in helping them deal with their child who is autistic. Am I
absolutely
in the right path here?
Absolutely.
Okay, so yes, go ahead, Susan. Sorry.
The only thing I would tell you, the one thing that I'm kind of sort of like add to that though is, when you're saying give them a reward or give them something, I know that as a child ages and they get to where they're 12, 13 to 16, something like that, we're still dealing with the same things, but we have spent enough time with this child to know that this is the behavior, this is what they're looking for, this is what I will and will not do. And most parents, I don't know about most, but some parents that I have met simply do not reward the behavior every single time it happens. If they get the behavior modification implemented and the child changes the behavior or does not do the inappropriate behavior, then parents will say, well, we will do this and that at another time, but we need to do this. And they start changing it up to this is how we function as a family.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not spending every waking moment looking for that good behavior and have to spend the rest of the time rewarding it. This is now you're interjecting, you're adding in another component. This is how we live as a family. This is what we do because it's the right thing. So, and that is most definitely more for the older child, because you do get some level of understanding there, but definitely the rewards, but not all the time.
Definitely the reward. So positive reinforcement, but not all the time. But in a sense, the positive reinforcement is really a good strategy in helping a child maintain that behavior that they just learned from removing themselves from the bad one. So, but again, it's going to be depending on each family and each parent, how they do the reward process and what they do in helping the child cope with the new diagnosis that they have of autism. I would love to continue on this show today and continue to talk about different angles of the autism spectrum, but we are coming to the end of our show today here live at BBS Radio. But don't worry, we'll be back Saturday, February 16, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Before I exit, I always will leave you an inspirational quote and hope that you enjoy the time spent listening to us today. Education is that component which brings in a meaningful relationship between the happenings around us and how our senses experience them. Taito Rahashi, from his title book, How Can I Talk If My Lips Don't Move? Inside My Autistic Mind. Thank you, ladies. And Renee, I'm sorry that you could not continue the conversation with us here today. But thank you, Susan, for staying with me. I look forward to having you again soon. And for my listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, have a blissful Saturday. Ciao now.